Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And if you would like a recording of Michael G. Haskins singing Joy of Resistance, you can make a donation to the station. I'm sure we could get one for you. I'll join him. Hey, you know, there are so many things nowadays that are confusing. It's like every time you think you've got something covered, you know, like let's say they tell you drink more water and you drink more water and they find out, oh, you drink too much water, it makes you overhydrate. And you say, oh, eat natural foods, and you're more likely to get beriberi, you know, or whatever it is. And, you know, it's like you're trying your best. We're all trying our best to do the best we can. Trying to take care of our children, too. Trying to take care of the kids as best we can, you know, trying to do what's best for them. We've learned that children living in an unhappy home do not do as well as children who are living with separated parents. You know, it's rather than have them sitting there watching all the horror between the parents, it's really horrible to grow up with parents who hate each other or who act like they hate each other. Horrible, horrible. So getting out is sometimes a good thing to do, but here's something we learned. We learned a few new things. Here's one. This came out of Denmark. It was just a shocker. When a family relocates, this is not just when people split up, but when a family relocates, like a military family, like a science family, let's say your father has a job doing rocket science and he moves from place to place, or he's an agriculturalist, or he picks wheat on a farm. How do you pick wheat? And you move, you know? You move. When a family relocates, the children are at an increased risk of suicide. What a funny thing. It almost makes sense, doesn't it? The researchers suggest, now listen to this. After three changes of residence, the suicide rate among kids age 11 to 17 doubled. Then after six moves, the rate tripled. What's the story? What's going on here? It's the teens and tweens are particularly sensitive to life's changes. And the distress and difficulty coping with the change can lead to suicidal behavior as a last resort. Here's what they said, Dr. Ping Kin, PhD, MD. Parents, caretakers, and schools should be aware of the psychosocial needs of children who have recently moved and get ready to help them with their distress. Now, here's the thing they suggest, the bottom line. The bottom line is try to involve the kid in the decision. A move can increase hardship and stress on the parents. And one of the things that happens when you have a move is there's so much more stress on the parents because they got to get new housing and new furniture and new everything. And they tend to not see their kids. And when you don't see the kids get a little lost on every move. So that's one of the factors. They believe that parents may be able to minimize the adverse effects of moving frequently by involving children in the process and immediately reestablishing a family routine. Now, the trouble with this is it does not mean you involve the children in the decision because the decision's out of their hands. You lose your friends, you know? No matter what you do, you have no stability. So the suicide rate, which kind of means that, you know, kids are disturbed. Well, we are trying everything we can nowadays to deal with people's unhappiness. How could, you know, if we're moving because we're trying to get a better job because we want to send you to better schools, how powerless we feel with our children so often. So often, you know, when you think about whether two people should stay together or not, you know, whether parents should be together, whether they should in some way stay connected, or should they separate. It's always a big issue, and they find that people who have split custody can do easily badly. Now we have another bit of information that's murderous. We find out that there's nothing, you know, what's really bad in a family is when you have a depressed person. Was your father or mother depressed? Was your husband or wife depressed? Depression. If you're a kid and you have a parent who's depressed, it is miserable. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI, trying to bring you information, thoughts about some of the stuff that you could learn about the human mind. A depressed person in a family is brutal because the child gets a sense that something is wrong, but they don't know what the problem is, and very often they take the blame on themselves. Very often they believe it's my fault that my parent is depressed. So what have we discovered? We have discovered a wonderful thing. We have found a way through therapy that you can take one out of three people who are depressed, put them in therapy, and, well, if you put all of them in therapy, one out of three of them are going to get better. Therapy is fairly effective. Then they found that if the person is just regularly depressed means regular depression. It means depression, but not psychotic depression, not bizarre depression, not weird depression, just depression. They found that you could help almost all of them with antidepressant drugs. Yep. By helping them, it means that you could lift the depression. Now, why do you want to use antidepressant drugs? I hate the idea. But because what's better off? Having your kid live with a depressed mother who goes to therapy and that doesn't work. She tries nutrition and that doesn't work. She goes to the gym and that doesn't work. And she's a dish rag around the house. Or he, the father, is a lump sitting there. What do they do? So to save the family, very often one or the other go for medication. Medication, the new medications over the last 15 years, antidepressants. Very, very effective in lifting depression. Nice idea, don't you think? Good for the kids, don't you think? Side effects are very funny. Not the normal side effects that we think are there, where you just have side effects like, you know, you feel tired or you get, you know, your blood gets funny or you lower your immune system. Not that kind of side effect. But side effects about romance. About bonding. There are side effects to taking antidepressants that are brutal on three areas. They affect the sex drive. They affect your feeling of romantic love. And they affect your feelings of attachment. If you screw around with serotonin, which is what you do with most of these antidepressants, you're going to in some way affect it. Very often you hear people take antidepressants and they lose their sex drive. Well, okay, so you lose your sex drive. How does that affect the family? Well, you know, means dad and mom are related in a different kind of way. And you want to know the kind of way that they get related differently? Here's what I see. They switch roles. The mother becomes the father, and the father becomes the mother. There begins to be more aggression inside of it. And it just doesn't seem to be the stuff that could be there, that used to be there. So love is not sexual love. For example, passion. When passion is missing between a mother and a father, between two people in a marriage, you see it missing in the touch, in the way they look at each other, in the connection. Sexual relationships are essential for children. to see in their parents, because they don't have to see them having sex, but they see them connected. You are connected. And then comes the second part, which is romantic love. We all assume that romantic love disappears over time, but romantic love is deeply affected by the serotonin enhancers. It changes significantly, as does the feeling of attachment. Somebody once came up with a thing called the anti-love drug. And here it is. They took these prairie voles and they gave them oxytocin, and they found that you could find the opposite of oxytocin. You could actually give them something that blocks the bonding chemical, and that the prairie voles, who are very connected to each other, who are like, you know, I love one prairie vole only, right? They suddenly become just like other animals, and they go around, and they're not completely attached anymore. So here we are in this funny world where it got better, things got better, because mom was no longer depressed, or dad was no longer depressed. But the home becomes a different thing to alienated people. So what I say is, if you are, and most people don't do this, if you're taking an antidepressant, and even though this is WBAI, I can guarantee you a huge percentage of our audience is taking them. If you are taking them, beware of the nature of your attachments. If you feel like you're no longer attached, it's a little like menopause. It's a little like it changes everything. You have to be aware of it, and you got to become conscious of it, and both people have to become conscious of it. And if you went to your psychiatrist and you said to your psychiatrist, you know, I'm no longer depressed, but I don't have any sex drive, the doctor's going to say, well, let's try Bobutrin. Let's try another one. But if you said to him, you know, I'm no longer depressed, but I don't feel the kind of attachment to my wife that I used to feel, he won't recommend a change. He'd say, oh, that's all right. As long as you're not depressed, you'll get better. He won't know the difference, and most psychiatrists won't see it as different. They will see sex drive as meaning that you should do something different. But when they see attachment and distance, they don't see that as important, I guess because they are, by nature of the fact of what they do for a living, distant. You know, they treat people by giving them chemicals mostly. Not all psychiatrists, but most. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. In New York City, I'm going to be taking your calls as usual today. Today I want to be talking about some of the erratic natures of the love that you saw in your family as a kid. You know, what did you see? What changes did you see? And how did that affect you? In a marriage, the number one ingredient that keeps a couple together is the success in resolving a conflict. Love itself goes far, but it's difficult to keep good feelings alive. Eventually, something has to give. And usually what gives is the commitment. You get kind of like the commitment to keeping things alive, the commitment to keeping a communication. What happens is one or the other person begins to turn off, and you just turn off. Now, unfortunately, when you're somebody who is trying to solve your problems and you're trying to deal with somebody else over a conflict, you're sometimes dealing around a subject like the house. I need the house to be cleaner, or I don't want the house cleaner. And unfortunately, each one of these conflicts that seem so important very often have other things underneath them. So it's hard to tell what's really going on. Let's say, for example, you give somebody an antidepressant and they wake up and they're no longer depressed, but they no longer feel attached to their mate. They don't feel that kind of bonding to their mate. So they start fighting with their mate. But, you know, when you're fighting with somebody you love, that's one thing. But when you're fighting with somebody you don't care about, that's another thing. So you're fighting about something, or you're having an argument about something, and you don't really feel the commitment underneath it. It's like, for as much as you care, you don't care if they go away. You know, you don't care if they leave town. You don't care if they walk away and never come back. In fact, you hope they'll walk away and never come back. That's a different kind of disagreement than two people who are trying to say, look, let's work this out together. So usually couples who are trying to make things work between them have no real idea what the real issues are. Let me give you the classic difference between two people. Usually the classic disagreement between two people is you have one kind of person who's a very passionate, loose, wild person. He or she, an artistic type, they're wonderful. And they get attached to, related to, maybe married to, somebody who is very organized, very together, very, you know, three-piece suitor. Somebody who knows how to keep the world in order. For as long as you have the love attachment with each other, everything goes fine. When the love attachment, the oxytocin, the chemicals begin to change, suddenly you find the other's idiosyncrasy unbearable. Why are you so wild? Why don't you clean up? Why don't you follow up on everything you do? Right? Or the other one, why are you so tight? Why aren't you looser? Why don't you have more emotions? The complaints over these things send people into therapy, but what do? They talk about issues like this, but they're not talking about what's underneath it. And what's underneath it very often is some kind of a chemical change that took place individually. So couples therapy usually misses a great deal. It misses because people don't know what they're really talking about. The only good thing about couples therapy is that very often a couple who finds themselves paying for couples therapy would rather get together and bond than continue paying for therapy. And you'd be surprised how it often works just to get two people in the same room, that they kind of say to each other, let's make this work. And they get past all the junk underneath because you never know what you're fighting about. I would love to sit here and tell you how to go through every problem that people have, but I, Armand DeMille, cannot. Because most of the things that people argue about make no sense whatsoever. They're just silly. What they're really saying is, I am no longer connected to you. What you really got to fix is the connection. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. We're talking about love relationships, and we're talking about some of the things that you would have seen as a child watching your parents go through this. You know, there is nothing more painful than growing. Well, it's not true. There's nothing more painful. If you grow up with a family with a lack of love and there's no love present, right? Then you meet somebody and you have three things working. You have sex, romantic love, and true attachment. These three things are working. And of course, these carry you for a good period of time. But then they start going, the sex goes, and it's not so much of a sex drive because there's not as much uniqueness to it. It's not so hard to get. It's there. It becomes more frequent, more ordinary, right? And then second comes the romantic love. You don't feel that dreamy kind of wonderful feeling. And third, after that goes the attachment. You're no longer attached. You're a child and you're watching your parents grow up like this. And they're not attached and they're not connected. Some of you have parents who are connected and attached, but they were not romantic and they were not sexual. At least you have that. But when you have a family that has no attachment whatsoever, how are you ever supposed to learn how to have a love relationship yourself? Where are you going to, do you think you go to school and in the eighth grade they say, and now we're going to teach you about loving and romantic relationships? And we'll teach you how it works, and we're going to teach you how. No, there is no class, there is no book, there is no instruction. The very people who are the teachers probably lack the information the most. So it's kind of a lost world. The only thing I say is if you're a parent, you know, and you want to give your child a gift, love your mate. Best thing you could do. 212-209-2900 is our number. That's our number here. We're going to take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Armand?
Good.
My name is Emmanuel for right now.
Emmanuel for right now. How did they ever give you that for right now middle name?
Let me tell you something, Armand. there's an ether that goes on in the communication, and you're touching on something that affects me exactly right here, right now, and I'm speaking about it because it's affecting my relationship, and it's very complicated, but I'm going to just give you a brief overview of the situation.
Sure.
My wife right now is going through, myself and my wife right now are going through the same situation that you're talking about, where just the other night she commented that I was talking on the phone and the timbre of my voice was of such that it created a disturbance in her psychic space. And I said to her, listen, you know, the day after, because she sensed that I was upset about it, the day after that, it wasn't about her psychic space. There was, it was about it, but there was something else that was going on underneath the statement, because it wasn't just, hey, babe, I'm trying to do something, you know, you're disturbing me or whatever. It was, it had a certain energy to it, and the energy thing was what I was picking up on. And the fact that you spoke on the differences of character, like artistic type as opposed to straight edge or taking care of, my wife and I share that phenomena. And like I said, it's a very complicated situation.
Well, wait. It's not so complicated if you get down to this, Emmanuel. Let's just say the following. Let's say that right from the beginning, the thing you're saying, you know, psychic space, one of the good words, you know?
Yeah.
What she's really saying is something about you.
Yeah.
Right? There's something about your voice, something about the way you were talking, irritated, and I felt an irritation inside me. If your wife had been, if she could have owned a little more, she would have said, I don't know what it is about me that is so sensitive here, but I'm feeling an increased sensitivity, and my increased sensitivity is directed to the way I hear you talk. I heard you talking on the phone. Now, I don't know why I am feeling this increased sensitivity, but you're talking on the phone the way you did kind of really triggered me into an anger space.
Okay, well, see, I know why that is, and several years ago, we introduced into our family a new member, her sister's nephew, that was very young at the time, and I advocated for his presence in the house because his mother was drug addicted and she was going through some stuff, and so our house became a little bit more crowded, our apartment actually, and she's held on to this situation as a violation of her pact that she made with her family, not because she came from an abusive background. And I was able to sympathize with it, but I was not able to empathize with it. I was empathizing more with her nephew or my nephew by marriage and seeing it in that way. And because now the apartment is a little more tight with our kids and this kid that's here, that this is something that she's been holding on to, and we've been trying.
But
to
I've got to tell you, Emmanuel, the details, as you expressed them, as you explained them, we know that to you they make a lot of sense because you're following the story. Uh-huh. Most of the audience probably couldn't follow it with much more detail. But I will say the following: when a person holds on to something, and they hold on to it like this issue of being invaded, you know, and having this thing, when they're holding on to it, there again, it means something about the bond is broken, because that would have been solved by now.
I would think that it
so there is something else going on, and it's not what you think. It's not the issue of the invader. See, this is what drives people crazy. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going on. You never know what's really happening. Well, you know, you got to get somewhat paranoid in the family. How old is your wife, by the way?
Well, my wife is 48 right now.
Yeah, how does she feel about heat?
Well, you know that she's been studying Chinese medicine, and she's also a psychotherapist, that, by the way. Okay, that is aware of these things, but she comes into these blockages that, and I know that it comes from a deep experience of sexual abuse and family abuse.
But
and
it
all
may
that
not.
Stuff.
What I'm saying to you is these are all good reasons, but most mm-hmm. of us go crazy with it. And for all we know, your wife is going through major hormonal changes that are making her feel a sense of unrest. And mm-hmm. it's a pity about therapists, and I know many of them. Most therapists are really stuck because they have so many reasons in their brain. They could use phrases like psychic space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you're better off not being so intelligent.
Yeah.
to try to get underneath it. It's very, very tough. And I'm telling you, Emmanuel, you are one of those many people who get stuck in these rationales of, I think I know why. And if you went to a therapist, you could spend a fortune talking this through.
Armand, that's what we're fighting about right now, because it's like the saying that you have the answer. You wouldn't be looking for me if you haven't already found me.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I've been trying to implant.
Have you two been away for any while?
You know something? We were just this morning, we were watching the weather report on TV, and we saw this thing about Bahamas, and we didn't even talk about it, but I felt that she connected to the being away, because we haven't been able to be away.
Good for you.
And the thing about why we haven't been able to be away was because right at the time when our kids were just becoming independent, this other child came into our situation.
Okay, but meanwhile, can you take this beautiful person away with you, and can you go to the Bahamas and spend some time away from everything?
Armand, let me tell you something. I'm hoping that we can do it, because I know that that's what we go for walks, or we try to go for walks and try to discuss
what gets in your way of doing it.
You know what? What gets in my way of doing it is because we have an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 5-year-old.
It's all tough, but get somebody to take care of the kids. Get somebody. You've got people around.
Yeah, but you know what it is? It's not just having people around. It's having the trust of the people that you have around.
Yeah, it's
to take
tough
care
stuff.
Of it. We're both. We're
Emmanuel,
both.
I want to thank you very much. It gets deeper and deeper and deeper.
I just wanted to connect the fact that you are connecting to a very personal situation for me.
You're beautiful.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, it gets very confusing. And now here comes this part about being smart. There is nothing worse. Well, there are a few things worse, but you should hear when two therapists are having an argument. Oh, my God almighty, it's terrible. Psychotherapists are terrible. It's like there's too much going on in your mind. You keep forgetting. You forget what it's like to just have a pure, innocent, beautiful bond with the other person. It gets very, very difficult. And so you start talking about issues. Now, what is the real issue? As we're listening to Emmanuel, how many of you heard how many issues we were talking about? There was so much stuff going on there. Everything from menopause to his menopause to restlessness, to anger, and stuff that goes on in between. It becomes very, very hard to have the truth come out. So here's what I'm saying to you, my friends. Try to get away from the intellect of the truth. If you want a positive mind and a positive relationship, try to get away from what you think it's about. And ask yourself one basic question. What stops me from hugging you? Don't even answer that question. But ask the question, what stops our embrace? And let nothing get in the way, and you start with your embrace. And I'm not talking about a sexual embrace. I'm talking about contact. I'm talking about holding somebody and saying, I must be able to hold you first. You can almost never argue with anybody if you can't hold them. Because it's always going to be some kind of a miserable argument, you know what I mean? It just can't be. It's not going to work out. It's so easy to talk about issues once you have the contact and the bond. And for the sake of the children around us, my friends, for the sake of the kids who are watching all this and feel responsible for most of this, I say it would be great if you could do it. It would be just great if you could make that connection happen. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking more of your calls in a couple of minutes. Right now, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we will continue.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're tuned to WBAI New York. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
If this were 5 o'clock on a Thursday, that music would mark the beginning of Behind the News. But it's not, so instead I'm here to invite you to join me, Doug Henwood, as I comment on the economic news and interview a wide variety of guests. Authors, activists, think tankers, and even the occasional Nobel Prize winner. Economics and politics from New York City to the world. What's happening and what it all means. Behind the News with Doug Henwood, Thursdays from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on WBAI.
Harry James, Backbeat Boogie. Harry James, trumpeter from a while back. Backbeat Boogie. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Right here in the middle of your dials, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. We were talking about the connection between people and the arguments they have and the way they talk about things and about how most of it is illusory. You see, there's a thing called blind spots. It's very hard for you to see yourself through your blind spot. When you believe something is true, it very often is serving a purpose. Like, for example, if you believe that somebody wants to hurt you, it serves many purposes. You could develop a lot of purposes for believing. For example, paranoia itself. Paranoia, somebody's out to get me, somebody's out to get me, somebody's out to get me. Paranoia, two noias, no, paranoia. So paranoia is, what does paranoia do? Why would anybody be paranoid? What would it possibly serve? Well, it makes you important. If you ever had the feeling that you were disappearing or unimportant in the world, if you develop paranoia, you believe somebody's thinking about you. So maybe paranoia very often can reflect a sense that you're non-existent, a sense of annihilation. Who would ever get to that? Now you treat it with, you start asking people, what are you afraid of? And you start trying to give them the reason behind it. And you start saying, no, it's not true. Let's go find out. But you never know. You never know. You never know what's behind it. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5. You never know what's, you know. Did you ever hear the story about the guy who had all the misfortune in the world? Did I ever tell you this story? Let me tell you a story. This is a joke in the form of a story. So there's this man who, when he is born, the hospital that he's in gets some kind of a major thing, an avalanche, comes and takes the hospital and kind of sweeps it away, goes down a mountain, and goes miles and miles away, and he goes somewhere. And he winds up losing his parents, right? And he winds up being brought up in some foster home. But the foster home, a cyclone comes in and takes the foster home away. And everybody's okay, but everybody is separate. And he goes somewhere and he settles down. He gets a certain age and an earthquake opens up and kind of separates him from his family. And he's kind of moves along and he just doesn't trust anything. So he decides there's something wrong with Earth. There's something wrong with being on the ground. I'm going to go on a steamer. I'm going to become a maritime traveler. I'm going to be a sailor. And so he gets on a ship, and what do you imagine would happen? The ship gets struck by lightning. The ship gets struck by lightning, and a big hurricane comes and wipes it and tosses it over, and everybody gets picked up except him. And there he is floating on a big piece of timber. It's the only thing that's keeping him going. The only thing keeping him above water is this piece of timber, which is being eaten by termites. So he sees his end coming. And he looks off at a distance and he sees the sharks are coming in his direction. And slowly underneath him, he feels a whirlpool sucking him under, right? And he says, oh boy, this is it. This is it. All my life from the very beginning, I have not been safe on this earth. He says, how can it be something? I don't know why this is. And he looks up at heaven and he says, God, why me? Why me right from the beginning? Why me from the time I was born? Why me? Why do you pick me for all of this? Why do I have to have all the disaster as the termites are eating the log is getting smaller and the cyclone's pulling them down and the sharks are coming closer? And he says, I don't care. I don't care. I don't mind if I go this time. Just tell me why me. And he looks up to the heavens and the sharks are getting so close he can see their teeth. He knows it's the end. The timber is gone. He's about to go under. And he says, just tell me why me. And the clouds part. And a little basket comes out of the sky. And a ribbon comes out of the basket. And the message is on the basket that says, because something about you just pisses me off. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Sometimes you just never know why stuff is happening. 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Thank you. How are you?
Good.
So my name is Malcolm, and I wanted to first thank you for hosting this hour. I think it's amazing, and hope you continue to get all the support that you deserve. So my issue is...
Hey, tell the station, everybody out there who loves this hour, the station's got new interesting management. Let them all know
how much you
appreciate all the different... All the different shows.
And if you're listening, the only way to continue to listen is if we support. We own this, so we have to make we demand to continue to listen to the things that we want. So back it
up. Malcolm, good for you. Back it up is right.
So now I'm going to need you to back me up on something.
Sure.
Or at least advise. Been in a relationship for about a year. And working. The issue has been me in this relationship. I'm the first to say that I'm trying to work on the me factor. And the me factor is, I think, an issue with trying to enjoy the couplehood, if you will. I'm often comparing myself to other people and where they are. And so this particular young lady was in a relationship with someone who is probably going to be a lawyer. And that was really intimidating to me. Now, mind you, I'm 25, but still, it was still intimidating because I'm not that at all. And I'm trying to find a career that I enjoy right now. I'm in a job that I'm very unhappy in and unsuccessful in, and given the status of the economy, it's very tough to sort of make transitions and things like that and still pay the rent. But I'm working or trying to work on all these things. So, you know, I suppose my question is, I feel like it's been very, very difficult because I'm trying to work on this me issue, and it's been very difficult for her.
Let me give you a hand with this, Malcolm, okay? Let's start with the fact that you're 25 years old and it hurts. It hurts for you to see yourself. You wish you were further than you are. First of all, let me ask you one question. Is this person that you're involved with older than you are?
No.
Good. So you have somebody who is there, who's your kind of equal, and it hurts. It hurts for you to feel, I should be further along. I should have more money. I should have a profession.
Right.
I want to earn and deserve the love I get. Now, when I say it hurts, Malcolm, do you ever feel it like a knife in your chest?
All the time.
That's what I want to talk about. Tell me about the feeling. The feeling. Now, just describe the ache itself.
The knife is the feeling of inadequacy.
We think it's a feeling of inadequacy. We know it's a knife.
Yeah.
We know it's something like that. So what does it feel like? Does it feel like you're concave or convex? Does it feel like your chest is composing, is getting together? Do you feel tensions?
The weird thing is that if we're ever, you know, sleeping together or anything, I find it more difficult to sleep with her than by myself. There's always this sense of unworthiness impatience because I'm wanting things to happen. I want my life to change.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's not happening.
So you obviously did not grow up in a very secure environment, right?
Well, you know, I grew up in a very interesting household. I grew up where there were no father figures. They were all, you know,
that's
females.
What I mean.
And, you know, there weren't really any relationships going on in the house. Or, you know, it was single women.
See, you're learning. You're learning how to do this. You're learning how to kind of be a man in a relationship with a woman, because up until now, you've been a sister. Up until now, you've been relating to your sisters as a sister, which is the way that most men in a family of women relate, which makes a lot of sense. You understand them on a certain level, but you don't understand them on this relationship level, and there is this feeling of not having a father, this feeling of having no man around, very often leads a person to feel inadequate no matter what they do. Malcolm, if anybody were to be listening to you and your sensitivity and the beauty of you right now, they would just feel their heart would be aching. They'd be crying out to you and saying, oh, Malcolm, give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance. You're a beautiful man. Your time will come. You'll find the father inside yourself. You'll find it. It's going to happen. Give yourself a chance. Don't put yourself down just because you're not there yet. You know what I mean? You're a beautiful guy. You have more consciousness than most people I've ever heard call in. So I would say it just takes a little more time than you're allowing it.
Thank you.
And if, one more thing, Malcolm.
Please.
If you lose this person because of her impatience, then this is not the right person. You got it?
I do.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, sir.
212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hi, Armand. I hear your other call on the air here.
Uh-huh.
My name is Matt. And I wanted to comment on the antidepressants thing.
Yes.
There's a very interesting book. May I mention the name of the title?
Sure, as long as you're not selling it.
No, I'm not. Okay. This is Peter Breggins. He's a psychiatrist. He wrote a famous book called Talking Back to Prozac.
Yes, I know the book.
And then he wrote another book called the Antidepressant Fact Book.
Mm-hmm. And those are not recent. Those are old.
Yes, those are old. But in that book, he talked about the effect of some of these antidepressants and why, in the book, 95% against the use of them.
Sure. No, you know, you have to figure this, and this is one of the things I realize about the book. When you want to sell a book as a psychiatrist, you have to either sell it for something or against something. And as I was reading this, I thought to myself, this is a very good point he's making. But the point is not up to the latest research. Now, there's a good reason for that. When you write a book in the year 2002 and you start writing it, by the time you get it published, it could be 2008. In between, all this research has taken place, and you haven't included it in your book. So what happens is you're writing a book that has to be the way it is, and mostly the research is out of date. So what he discovered anti-medication, which I believe was a very good argument, but there was a much bigger basis that was later to show up that could have helped him a great deal. I'm not sure in a family of a depressed mother who is suicidal, if I would rather have the depressed mother suicidal around her children or taking medication. I would rather she gets herself out of this one way or another, and if you tried everything else and it doesn't work, at least pick your head up, take the medication, get yourself to recovery, then go to whatever you got to do, therapy or whatever, get yourself off the drug later. But I would much rather that have the children growing up with people who are not depressed than people who are depressed. Don't you agree with that? Don't you think that?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
The other point of view is what he says in that book. Well, number one, he gives you diagrams. He shows you how it works in the brain.
I saw that. As I said, that's old research. I saw it, and I know what you're saying. Huh?
The other thing is that it's an interesting point that a person who's depressed is different from the average person who may be shallow and, you know, he just goes along at some job and nothing bothers him.
Yeah, that's a different thing completely. You're absolutely right. Well, so, let me ask you something about your own life. Have you had experience with depressed people?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, what was that experience? Tell me.
Well, personal experiences.
Yeah.
I have experienced it, and I have.
You've been through it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And what would you call yourself? Somebody who's averagely depressed, or somebody who's got a deeper depression?
Well, it was deeper, but I found certain things by reading and listening to programs like WPAI and spiritual practices. You sort of find your way somehow.
Well, that was great. That means that your depression was responding to what happened to you when you did all these things. What a wonderful thing. So many people do that. They do recover by their efforts. But, you know, the trouble with it is you can't shove a book at somebody because it's not going to work, and you can't tell them not to eat meat because it's not going to work, because all of the things that you would normally suggest to somebody don't necessarily work for them, even though they worked for us. But I'm so glad that you have gotten yourself to a point where, you know, where you're feeling better, Matt, you know? You know, I'm so glad you've come out of it, and I thank you for your contribution. Do you have a love relationship yet?
I had one, you know, for many years.
Yeah.
It's gone now.
So what you need is, here's a hint for your next love relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Teach nothing.
Teach nothing.
Don't be a teacher. You have a tendency to be a teacher, and in your next relationship, you can be very present, but don't give any instructions. And you'll see things will be a little different.
That's interesting.
Isn't it interesting? Okay, Matt, thank you for calling in. You know, that's just from my two cents of hearing.
Well, and also I was one of the BAF volunteers in the pledge room. At the
Oh, were you really? Thank you so much. Thank you.
Sorry
for that.
I didn't meet you, but I met Marty. She is a sweetheart. Send her my love.
I will. Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's get another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Yeah.
Turn down your radio, would you please?
Oh, it's off.
Hi there.
Hi. Armand?
Yes.
Hi, this is Doreen. How you doing?
Hello, Doreen.
All right. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to... Okay. Listen,
Could you talk directly into the phone, or do you have a landline? Your voice is a little bit of a distance.
Oh, all right. How about now?
No, that's a little worse.
Really? Okay, how about now?
Okay, try it from there.
Okay. How do you know when you should give up on someone in a relationship?
Well, tell me what's going on with you. Do you feel complete loss of attachment to somebody?
I'm not sure if I'm in love with this person anymore because he's disappointed me a lot. He has an addiction problem of which he's worked on and then stopped and then worked on and then, you know, so he's not consistent. You know, he went into rehab and did well for a while and then relapsed like quite a few times. And I just don't know if it's worth my time and effort and energy. And
it's such a difficult thing. How long have you been together?
4 years.
Yeah, it's such a difficult thing because addictions are a funny thing. When a person has an addiction, it's like you have a menage a trois. You have a different relationship. It's not just you and him. It's you and him and the addiction. And it's like you're not really talking to him anymore. You're talking to the addiction. And it's very, very, very difficult. If you had 20 years invested and a bunch of children, I would have a different advice than if I said, well, there are no children in the middle here, and there's probably the best thing you could do is take some distance and to see what he does to clean himself up, you know, because it may be the incentive he needs to stay online.
Yeah.
And that's very, very difficult to do. Let me ask you something. Did you have, when you were a kid, were you close to your father?
My father was like two different people. He could be a nice guy, and then the other side was very physically abusive and rageful. And
just like your boyfriend.
He's not like he's my boyfriend's a sweet, gentle person.
But he has two sides.
Yeah, that's true. You got a good point.
What are
point
his
there.
Two sides?
You got a good point there.
What are the sides? Tell me.
Well, when he's a hard worker. He's sweet, kind, gentle. He'll do anything for me. He's honest, the whole nine yards.
But then when he gets near his substance,
he just acts strange, you know, disconnected or aloof or just goes into another world. I mean,
so can you understand why you get attached to somebody like that? I mean, this was your idea of what a daddy was like. So breaking with him, in effect, also gets you to face what it was like to deal with that early childhood pain. You know, I mean, here it is. You got the same thing as you had as a kid. It's a terrible thing to be living with, and it's so tough. But very often, the thing that irritates us the most in a person is something from way back when.
Right.
And you see, even to you, it was a surprise for you to discover this, even right now.
Yeah, because you know what? I'm 53. And through my life, one person I didn't know at the time until something happened to the person, but this is the third person that I've known since I'm about 20 that has had some type of an addiction problem. So I said to myself, why am I attracting these people? It wasn't in my parents, or it's not in my history, it's not in me.
But it is in your parents.
Yeah.
Your father is an addict. You see, bipolarity, if that's what it was, or this erratic nature, is very much the same as you get with different addiction people. You know, you get the two sides. That's what you're used to. That's what you've had. Maybe it's time not to have that anymore. Or maybe it's time to have that with more consciousness. You know, it's like it becomes the way. You know, a very interesting thing.
Yeah.
What happened to you around Al-Anon?
I went for a while, and I don't know, I sort of found it to be a little bit of a downer, so I myself am in personal therapy, because I had a rough year, lost my job, and I had a multitude of things happen, and so I've been in private therapy myself, you know. I asked Tim, does he want to go to therapy, and he's just always like, oh, no, everything's okay, and, you know.
Well, I would if I were you, I would get myself back into Al-Anon. Because even though it's a downer, it's a place that's going to help you get free, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think. I wish you luck.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend. If you want to get a copy, if you want to hear today's show, you could go to WBAI.org. Or if any of the older archives, you can go to thepositivemind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.
It's 3 minutes before 2 o'clock. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI, and WBAI.org. It's 71 degrees and cloudy in New York City. The sun has made its final appearance of the day. Mike Sargent walking into the studio right now, has a lot of materials with him, as always. Did you know, Mike, do you follow tennis at all? Do you follow tennis? Only when you play. Well, Serena Williams was defeated by Svetlana Kuznetsova in the quarterfinals. Yeah, it just happened. Well, it happened about an hour or so ago. I was watching the match on the way, well, before I left the house on the way in. She was down a set, then she went up. And tied a set, but she lost 7-6, 7-3, 5-7, and 7-5. She lost against the Russian, who is aiming to reach the final for the second time after finishing as runner-up in 2006. So Serena Williams is out. Andy Roddick is out. The Americans are out. And the young Frenchman, what's his name? Monfils! Gael Monfils, he's got that, well, they call it a wingspan. I mean, you know, he's a human being. He's not like Rodin or anything. But he has. His arms are really very, very long. Roger Federer took the first set against Monfils. We'll see. We'll keep you apprised of that as the afternoon wears on. I'm going to be looking at that. All right, so it's have to make way for Real World with Mike Sargent after giving you that tennis update. It's 1:59, and let's see, should I sing the Joy of Resistance song again? Joy of Resistance. I really love that. No, that's such a cool. Let's do that right now, and then we'll. No, I don't need any backup. I can sing it by myself. Joy of Resistance. Yeah. Okay.
Joy of Resistance. We're sisters of the Joy of Resistance.
Monica Paul, 31, of Montclair, New Jersey, was shot to death by her ex-husband in front of their two children, in spite of having obtained an order of protection. She joined the more than three women murdered every day in the U.S. by their intimate partners. On Thursday, June 4th at 11 a.m., join the Joy of Resistance with guests Joanne Paul, Monica's mother, and Irene Weiser of Stop Family Violence as we discuss Monica's Law and violence against women by men and its effects on families, along with you on the phone. And in the wake of Sunday's murder of abortion provider Dr.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.